Blog Talk Radio.
This is Jasa Sagonige, a 7th grade grandson of Sawanuka, keeper of the Holy Cherokee Ark, who during the American Revolution became first beloved man of the Cherokee, head man of the Upper, Middle, and Lower Cherokee. Please join us at 5 p.m. Pacific Time on Sunday evening and learn how you, regardless of ancestry, may gain the privilege of worshiping as you please, even using indigenous, plant-based, native sacraments. Aho. You have been led by the Spirit to Prophecy Keepers Radio, a cooperative service of the White Roots of Peace Council. Whether it be the modern Asaga of Peru, the current kahunas of Hawaii, today's medicine people of the Americas, the holy ones of Africa, shamans of the East, North, West, and South, or the present-day Atawehis of the Cherokee, we bring you the traditional elders and teachers of our modern times and their confidants from the Americas, the steppes of Asia, the Holy Land, the islands of the sea, Africa, and Australasia. We have not been conquered, and we defy the established order. This is Will Bluewater, the host of Prophecy Keepers Radio, speaking on behalf of the White Roots of Peace Council.
It's 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow? It's 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow? It's 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow?
Thanks for listening to the Wisdom of the Elders on Prophecy Keepers Radio, revealing closely guarded ancient secrets here in the modern information age of Aquarius.
I'm Austin Powers, and I like Gas Mojo. It's a very sexy and very switched on, yeah.
But you gotta have Gas Mojo, baby, yeah!
What a gas, baby, yeah!
I'm going to go back to the 60s and steal Austin Powers' Gas Mojo.
Hi, folks, this is Will Bluewater speaking on behalf of GasMojo.net Engine Booster. Immediate 25% fuel savings with GasMojo.net in just 5 minutes after installation, and your grandma can do it, so you just strap it on your fuel line, folks. Some customers report much greater savings. The GasMojo.net Engine Booster catalytically conditions any hydrocarbon fuel, be it gasoline, propane, diesel fuel. It's not a filter, it contains no metals, magnets, or toxic substances, and uses no electricity. The GasMojo.net Engine Booster unit is a specially designed tube containing a completely safe proprietary media. It's a passive fuel treatment process designed to disperse hydrocarbons for better performance and mileage, and also to break down carbon and other contaminants. Unlock your fuel's hidden energy potential now with GasMojo.net. And folks, you get a 100% money-back guarantee on this. I've got one on my car. It was developed by an old friend of mine, and he's an honorable person. You got to try it, folks, and go open a bank account now for all the money you're going to save. GasMojo.net, GasMojo.net. Just do it.
Well, folks, this is Blue Honor.
And symbolic way.
And we are live, and we've got Mark Borcherding and with our guest, Robbie Holes. They were just talking things over in the green room or whatever color the virtual whatever, you know. Anyway, let me tell you a little bit about our guest. You know, James Mooney went to jail just to prove that Aboriginal healing wasn't just for red folks, okay? And he got a blessing from Leslie Fulbright to take the medicine to the white man. And Robbie and her husband have been through a lot. She lives out in Seattle. She's a holistic wellness consultant at Holtz Wellness. She's you know, from near Chicago and you know, Kankakee, and you know, she used to hang around Carbondale and places like that. And anyway, we'll let her speak for herself. How you doing, Robbie?
Pretty good. You're good. Your research is good. You're bringing back
right
memories.
It's right there on your Facebook page.
A little too revealing. Yeah.
But, geez, you think you're revealing. I ought to look to my LinkedIn page. Oh, my gosh. Got my life history. But anyway, we've got some listeners, and we might have some straight people there. And I'll watch the studio page. You know, if somebody calls in and wants to interrupt you with a question, let me just let them do it. Or
absolutely, of course.
Okay, sure.
Yeah, I'm open
folks,
to it.
Go ahead and call in. Well, in the meantime, now here's the hard part. In order for Mark to do your Mayan birthday reading, he needs to translate your I had a 2-hour nap before the show. The Gregorian, we got to translate your Gregorian birthday, including your. I should have told him to do this, and when nobody's listening, but we got to have your whole birth date.
Okay.
Now, if you don't want to reveal that, I'll put you guys over for
a few seconds.
I've already got it.
Okay. Oh, yeah. You got it. Okay.
Yeah.
She didn't
have
to get the date over there, but I've already got it converted.
Gotcha.
Right now.
Okay. Well, when the women folk, you know, we have to be sensitive and. And and some people just flat, you know, don't want it revealed, because they're it just depends on what tradition.
You know,
to be
honest with you, Will, I never thought I'd hit 50, so I am really proud and happy to say that I hit 59. I'm thrilled.
What? You're a year older than me. I'm going to be 59 December 8th.
Well, okay, then. I have a little tiny bit, possibly a little bit more wisdom. I don't know. At least I have a little time on you.
My gosh. Huh.
Yeah.
Well, Mark,
no, I mean, I almost died twice. I'm thrilled to be here. I'm thrilled to say I made it to 59.
Yeah. I've been there, too. I got hit in March of 73. I was in my ROTC uniform, and I was coming back from West Knoxville, where I was teaching archery at the YMCA, and going to go to Fort Campbell the next day. And there used to be a hump in the freeway right at a place called Paper Mill Road, just as you get starting to get into Knoxville. And as I come up over the hump, there was gridlock. Now, they've since graded this down because there were so many accidents. And I was in a 68 VW. I had to gear down twice. You know, it didn't occur to me somebody would hit me. I don't remember. I didn't see, hear, or feel a thing, but I woke up in a police car for a few seconds, and, you know, and I saw the shotgun on the dash, and I said, what happened? And I heard this colloquial voice in the back seat say, son, I just hit you in 55 miles an hour in a 2.5-ton nursery steak bed truck. And I must have passed out again. And then I remember... They loaded me on the ambulance, and the cop said, he says, son, I walked by the car 5 times before I even knew it was there. The Chrysler Newporter in front of you was total. It totaled the back end of the Lincoln Continental in front. And we're talking about these, you know, this is 73. And then a pickup truck hit the rear of him. The cop didn't even know my car was there.
Wow.
And, you know, it was 2 weeks later before things started happening. You know, I had a cut on my lip and huge bruises on my thighs because I got thrown around in the car. But eventually, you know, I was by the mid to late 90s, my sleep apnea was so bad, and they didn't even invent the CPAP until the early 90s. And by the time I got one, I had to lose my job and get out of food stamps to get one. And the doctor told me, he says, you don't have obstructive sleep apnea. You've got central sleep apnea. He said, did you have a head injury? And I said, yeah, 1973. Well, for 5 years, I couldn't sit more than 20 minutes without my lips turning blue and falling asleep, unless I was talking or typing. But go to a staff meeting, 5 minutes, I'm asleep. So,
wow,
you know,
that must have really impressed your employer.
Well, it was okay. They understood I was a senior collector at Discover Card, and they knew I had this problem, but I had to just be busy doing something. But boy,
yeah.
You know, and I get unbusy, boy, and I'm gone. And then
yeah.
and then if we and then whenever we travel someplace, we had a fifth wheel, and I had to have a walkie-talkie with my wife. She'd be driving the car behind, and when I'd start falling asleep and heading for the side of the road, I used to have one of these devices that you hang on your ear, and if your head tips forward, it buzzes, you know. If I'd start heading for the
yeah.
side of the road, she'd say, wake up. So, oh, can you imagine?
Yeah.
So, I've been through hell, too. And
wow. We take a lot for granted, don't we? We take a lot for granted. That,
yeah.
that brain is something.
Yeah.
I mean, the first time I almost died, well, I ended up with a blood transfusion that had hepatitis C, and the HEP almost killed me, and then the experimental treatment they put me on almost killed me. But the second time, I couldn't finish a sentence because I couldn't remember what I was talking about. So the brain, we just, you know, we take it for granted. So I seriously never thought I'd hit 50. And honestly, I've healed all that. I've totally cured the hepatitis and the fibromyalgia and the chronic fatigue syndrome and all of that. So it's, you know, that if there's one thing I can give your listeners, it's like be tenacious about your health. Just because the medical community tells you something doesn't mean that that's necessarily what is going to happen with you. That's just what they know at the moment. Because they said I'd have hepatitis C the rest of my life, and not the case. So.
Wow. Yeah. Well, you guys go ahead I work with the Dr. Charles L. Rogers. He's an oncologist, and you know, we're working on a couple of websites, you know, that are directed toward this, and he may even want to come on and say hi. He's world famous, Mark, do your thing. I'm gonna let Dr. Rogers know, and if he's around and read an email, he may want to call. So do your thing.
Okay.
And.
Yeah, I'm curious to see what Mark's thing is here. I'm ready.
Okay, well, what I'm going to do is I'm giving you a reading on your birth, and this is done with
there's the badger. We had to focus the badger. Badger medicine.
Watch out for the badger, okay.
Well, have you heard the story about the badger and the Hopi?
No.
Am I being set up
for a joke?
No, it's not a joke.
Okay.
And badger medicine is a healing medicine. It's kind of like bear medicine. And when the Hopi were in South America, one of their migrations going through South America, they were coming back going north, and one of their children, a little girl, was deadly sick. And they found a badger, and the badger gave them the herb information, healing information, and wisdom to heal the child.
I threw a little otter in there for
you. So this particular clan renamed themselves Honani, or Badger Clan, in honor of this animal that gave them wisdom of the herbs to heal this child.
Oh.
So that's a badger story.
That's
anyway.
Very cool. That's very cool. I love that.
Well, Robbie, have you got a totem that you identify with?
The wolf, I do. You know, I've had a lot of meditations with that, and seems to be the one that comes through all the time. Yeah.
Well, I haven't uploaded one. I should have done that. I'm Wolf Clan on that side, and of course my dad's mother's people were they left Vladimir Volinsky about 50 years before the Nazis wiped it out. And so I've informed by Rabbi Mikhail Baron that in spite of the fact that the family left the Sinai Covenant 2,673 years ago now, I still got that lineage of the wolf from Benjamin.
Ah.
But, here's a little eagle for you.
Love it.
Okay. Well, we've invoked everybody we can, and take it away, Mark.
You know, we have a lot of eagles around here in Seattle and where I live.
Oh, gosh,
yeah. You know, yeah, it's
we're
and that's
see
a
eagle in your birth reading too.
Oh, that's cool. We used to have an eagle's nest on our property. We lived on a river, and I'm telling you, the branches in that nest, I don't know how that eagle got those things up there. They are huge. They're trees that he had built this nest out of. So, yeah, very impressive. Very impressive stuff. So, okay, Mark,
I'll give you a little explanation of what I'm doing here.
Okay.
The reading I'm doing for you is done with a Zulkin that is the Mayan Zulkin that has been expanded. It's something I was given back in around 1998. I can also give your traditional Mayan birth reading, too, if you'd like that.
I'm up for any of it. Yeah, whatever feels good.
In the traditional Mayan day count, you were born on a day called One Etznap, or in the Aztec, One Tikpatl. And it's the 118th day, the first day of that cycle, because it starts with a one. And that means kind of a beginnings, great force, power, something. It'd be associated with the bottom or base of a pyramid. And then the glyph, which is the Etznab glyph, that glyph sometimes is related to light, kind of balance. It would, or mirroring, reflections of things. Also the obsidian knife blades would be associated with that. And so it's the beginning of that particular cycle, so that means it kind of carries the energy of that entire 13-day cycle. And it would be a day that is kind of about health. So the day is to cure difficult diseases, to deal with negative energies and things and negative energies with societies and stuff. And also in intelligence, it would be also related to connected because of lightning. So may have those things may affect you all the way down to the blood and dreams, all from anything going from your blood all the way up to your dreams.
Wow.
So
well, you're right on with that stuff. So yeah.
So it can have rapid healings. It can help you deal with bad attentions, from even people that might seem to have been friends that maybe weren't. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of stuff like that. Now, in the newer Zulkin that's been expanded, I'm going to give you kind of three readings, and they're going to be from the perspective of a forward flow of time, which is the way we normally think of time, moving forwards, right, from past to the future.
Right.
And I'm going to give you another part, which is the opposite. It's going from what we perceive as the future going backward in time, so a backward flow of time into our present. And then the third component is going to be where those two things come together and balance each other and create a gateway or a zero point between world cycles. And so the first one, this is on your birth. So the first one is, in a nutshell, it kind of is teaching about the joy of being able to love.
Mm.
So I would say that's probably a big, major component of your life.
Yep, yep.
And it also has combined with, go ahead.
That's me, yeah. So far you've got me pegged, yeah.
So I'll read each one of these has kind of a poem or a song that goes with it. And so the way they interpret it is if you looked at the, when I convert a Gregorian date into the Zulkin date, you can think of the Zulkin calendar as a calendar, but you can also think of it as a song that's being sung. And so when you convert the Gregorian date, our calendar dates, into this, what you're sort of doing is converting that date into a musical note within that song.
Love that.
And so these words are the words, sort of words that define the meaning of that particular musical note that you were born on in that song. So these are the words. I'll read them off here. It says, I inspire a melody of rejoicing and desiring soul. I sing of joy and forgiveness with my never-ending tone of love, in course with yin-yang's energies of power, balance, and correct actions.
Wow.
These type of things that are in here, soul, joy, forgiveness, love, balance, these probably have been key aspects that maybe you were already had that ability when you're born, or things that you picked up along the way during your life that you felt were important.
Yeah.
has a lot of heart energy. The color of this particular glyph is green, and that would relate to the Quetzal of the Quetzalcoatl, or Quetzalberg, or Quetzalcoatl. So that'd be the green part. The Quetzal would be more red color. It's in the Sib cycle, or Condor cycle, of intelligence. So this is combining intelligence with more intelligence from a little bit more of the heart perspective.
You're nailing it. That's me. That's good. You're very good.
Now we'll swing over and look at the backward flow.
Okay.
And here we see the eagle energy, because
this
day is of musical note is in the eagle cycle. So you have condor and eagle cycle and eagle energy combining. Have you ever heard of the prophecy of the condor and the eagle?
Tell me. Let's tell our listeners.
The prophecy is in a lot of native prophecies that the condor represents the southern hemisphere, you know, South America and stuff like that, those native peoples. And it's the heart energy, family, values, and things like that. More of that line from the heart perspective. The eagle energy is of the northern area of the earth. And it's considered more the kind of the mind or mental aspect versus the heart. Now, prophecy talks about when these two birds or these two ways of doing things come together and fly together in the same sky, wingtip to wingtip, in harmony.
That beautiful.
With each beautiful. Other.
Yeah, the balance. Yeah.
All right.
I love that. Beautiful.
So this particular day, I'll read its song with its singing. And again, this is the perspective of the next world cycle looking backward at your birth. So you might find that these energies that are in this particular part of the song are going to be things that might have been getting stronger for you in the last, you know, 2 years, 5 years, maybe even 10 years, all the way back maybe even till around 1998 or so. So I'll read those words. I harmonize a melody of nurturing and realizing belonging. I sing of birth in natural ways with my centering tone of desire, in course with Moloch's energies of flow, universal water, and thankfulness.
Wow. And that kind of brings back the days of when I was with my late husband, Gary, Dr. Holtz. So, yeah, that fits very well.
Well, remember I told you I had a little treat for you?
Yeah.
Here it comes.
Okay.
I've already done a reading on Gary's birth and his passing.
Wow. Okay.
Similar to what I've just done for you. But when you have both the birth and the passing, you can then unify both those and create what I call a life reading. So, because you have the birth and the death, so you can do something on the entire life.
Well, let me interject something here. The Hebrews do the same thing here. They look at your Hebrew birth and death date. And when I did Red Elks, he had the I don't know if you ever been heard of the Rebbe in New York, you know, years ago. This guy was probably the most famous Hasidic Rebbe of all time. The day he passed away was the same as Red Elk's birthday, and either date it meant a person who brings heaven down to earth. And Red Elk, he liked hearing that, you know, that's very similar to what Mark's talking about.
Wow.
Okay, the connection here is I took and did a, I'm not going to go over Gary's entire reading here, but what I am going to do is bring it in right now on your birth, because it connects directly to it. This relates to the future flow.
Okay.
Moving backward. And remember what I said here. It says, harmonize a melody of nurturing and realizing belonging. I sing of birth in natural ways with my centering tone of desire in course with Moloch's energies of flow, universal water, and thankfulness. That Moloch symbol or energy, when I unite Gary's birth and his death, it forms a day called One Moloch. So this part of your reading is connecting you and Gary's entire life.
Love it. Wow.
And so this is the what it's talking about here in specific is where he's helping guide you. And remember, this is on the flow of time that's coming back to us from the future.
Yeah.
And so when you see things that have to do with flow, any kind of flow of energy, universal water or water, so things that have to do with water and water flows too, and things that have to do with thankfulness and gratitude, okay? Those are things that he is guiding you with and how his spirit is helping you with.
Wow, I have no doubt of that. No doubt of that. That's very cool. Yeah. That does not surprise me a bit. Yeah.
And it's also Engel. He's also in, he's combining that with the eagle energy.
Okay.
So there's, with that thankfulness and all, that's combined, he's connected that into your eagle totem. So, now where these two come together, remember these are two flows, forward and backward, backward, forward, whatever, they come together, right? And they create a third component.
Yeah.
This component is kind of a, for you, is sort of like what you're trying to do, moving from one world to the next, one realm to the next, from the fifth sun into the sixth sun. And in it, it's a day that connects back to your other one. Remember the one on the joy and stuff?
Yes.
The first one we did? It's also the same energy.
Ah.
Except for it has a different number to it. It has a 9 instead of a 17. And it is connecting you into Blue Otter's birth. And Mayan one's a 9-eek.
Why does this always happen with our most of our guests are somehow connected to 9-eek? That's weird. Wow, that's strange.
Well, this
happens
one isn't,
a lot.
This one is not a direct hit on it, but it's just, it is symbolically, symbolism-wise, it's a direct hit.
Yeah. Again, no surprise.
So we'll read its song here, too. And that is, I harmonize a melody of rejoicing and realizing soul. I sing of joy and forgiveness with my centering tone of desire in chorus with peace's energies of childlikeness, peace, and hope. And it's the 9th day of the Eek cycle.
That's beautiful. You're good. That's fascinating. And I love that you did this with, you pulled in Gary and you got Blue Otter in there too. That's awesome.
Well, I didn't do it. You guys did it. I'm just pointing out what's another way of seeing what's happened.
Yeah, that's really cool. Well, it's really clear to me that, you know, what you said is it's so right on, especially with Gary. I feel his presence. I see his energy every morning. I didn't expect that when he passed, he would be showing up every morning at 8:00 on the clock. He was always a very punctual guy. He was a, you know, and I don't know why it is that the punctual people marry the people who are always late.
What kind of animal energy did he have?
I don't know. I just know he was a triple Scorpio. That's one thing that I know.
Oh,
I don't know.
Oh, you're kidding.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow, you're lucky he ever told you anything about anything. I was married to a Scorpio, or my son's a Scorpio, and okay.
Yeah. Well, you know, after he passed, he would show up every morning. I could see his energy. It was a very distinct pattern. And he showed up at 8:00, not 8:01 or, you know, 7:59. And last year at the spring when we had the time zone change, he was an hour off. And I just thought, you know, that was pretty funny. It's like, you know, I got you on this one. You're an hour off this time. So, yeah, but even now, it's been many, many years, he still is very involved with working with me, and I still see his energy at 8:00 in the morning, which is very cool.
Well, this relationship you have with him, in Hebrew terms, they call it zodic. Did he ever tell you, I'm going to watch over you, before he passed?
You know, I knew that. But I didn't know he'd be showing up every morning.
It's understood. Yeah. See, this is when there's a prearranged, you know, or there's an understanding. You know, he's your zodic, and he's a person that Christians would understand this as a person who's an intercessor for you. Only they're in the spirit world.
Yeah.
And so, Mazel tov, you know.
Yeah. Well, you know,
I got two of them. I got Joanne and Betty, because I've been widowed twice now, and I see them both all the time.
Ah, you've been widowed twice. Wow.
Oh, yeah. Well, to give you, here's one for you. One morning, I combination flunked out of and couldn't. Well, I just couldn't handle the stress of grad school in 1999, and there wasn't a financial aid. So, what Betty and I went trucking. So I get through training, and I'm sitting out right at this truck stop, right at the Oklahoma Texas border, and Joanne wakes me up, and she just gives me this stern look. So I get on the phone and I said, what's up? I said, I just saw Joanne. She said, well, did the company call you? I said, no. I said, I know something's wrong. She said, well, she says that your son, he was at, we were told through spirit that he needed to go to get a trade before he approached any kind of college. So he was a Job Corps. Well, they thought he had a heart attack. What we really found out later was that it was atrial fib. And he had, you know, a spell but that's the kind of thing, you know. And so, and when I need scolding or encouragement or whatever, either Betty or Joanne's there. And but they were both. I married Joanne at 22, and she was 8 years my senior. We were married for 18 years. Then I married her best friend, who was 12 years my senior. And we were married for 12 years, and so I've got two of them. And so,
yeah, it's lovely. I call them part of my posse, my team. It's amazing how much help you get from them.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah. And I don't know about your former your widows, but I mean, or your former wives. But Gary has a way of getting roses to me, and so we always.
Wow.
Yeah, he manages to get red roses to me all the time through different people. It's beautiful.
I dabble a little bit in essential oils, and there is no higher frequency than rose, and it's what it was the color. It was the what was associated with Jesus' mother, whereas orange blossoms is what a lot of people report. If they see Jesus, but with tons of people who've seen Mother Mary, and they say, "I smell rose," you know. So
yeah, that's her flower. Yeah, and you're right. It is the highest frequency. Roses are. Yeah. I hadn't made that connection. That's why it was always the red rose. I just thought it was just such a symbol of love. So
A rose by any other day.
What's that?
A rose by any other day, but still a rose.
Yeah, well, I've got one sitting here on my, on my desk. I went to France with a group of people, and we were following Magdalene's trail. And he came to one of the gals in a dream or whatever. Actually, it was quite dramatic. It was much more dramatic than that. And said, I want you to get a rose to my wife. And because we had always dreamed of going to Paris, and so here I am. But I didn't realize I'd be going with him as an etheric spirit. So she spent days trying to find a single rose, and she did find one, and she gave it to me, and I got caught in customs trying to bring it back, and the woman, thank God, she let me bring it back through, because I wasn't supposed to bring it through customs, and I think I just kind of burst into tears when she tried to take it away and said, this is from my deceased husband, and she just kind of like, under the table, let's just be quiet about this. So that was beautiful. Yeah, yeah.
Oh,
so it sits here in my office.
Two other things for you.
Okay.
One is this Saturday, September 14th, might be kind of a special connection because that this Saturday on September 14th is going to go to an exact alignment readout with the day Gary was born. So I wouldn't be surprised if you might have some kind of special communication maybe Saturday.
Oh, that's very cool. Yeah, that's nice.
The next
I wouldn't
thing
doubt
is,
it either.
Remember I said he was sharing things with you about thankfulness, gratitude, flow, and stuff like that?
Yes.
There's one more thing that he's probably working with you on, and it has to do with, in a single word, purification.
Okay. Okay.
Now the Hopi speak of a coming great day of purification. So it might have something to do with that, possibly.
Yeah.
Oh, don't fear it. Don't fear the Ripper. There you go.
I love it.
Don't fear the Reaper.
No, I think it's I think it's the more you know about the other side, the more it's like, wow, what a party, you know?
Well, I just went to Green Corn Festival it'll be 3 weeks ago this weekend, and the eighth carrier of Sitting Bull's Pipe. I haven't seen this guy since 2001, you know, and Carlo Carlino, hawkwalker.com. And he gets up. I didn't know he was going to be there. And he says, we've got 3 years left. And I stood up. You know, you're not supposed to interrupt an elder when they're standing at the bar, but I stood up and I said, oh. I said, how do you know that? I said, because in 1997, I was praying, how long have we got? And that night, I had a dream of the face of a clock, and there was a brilliant red flash, and the hands of the clock melted, and the number 16 flashed. And, of course, Daniel's timeline is pointing toward 2016 also, so, yeah, we're getting close.
Wow. We'll find out, won't we?
Yeah, we will.
Yeah. Either way, it's all good. I mean, honestly, I mean, I like the whale's response. It's just one lifetime. It's you can't lose either way. It's good.
Yeah. Well, we live forever, so
yeah,
what the heck?
It's infinite. I know. It's a trip. This is like, to me, this is like the A ticket on Disneyland. It's the best ride. We just keep coming back over and over again. Yeah, it's quite the place. As I understand it, it's one of those few places that, well, first of all, it's free will. Planet Earth is free will, but it's one of the very, very few places where you get a physical body and you get emotions to the degree that we get them, which is a great way to learn and experience. So it's an amazing place, and I think we tend to get hung up on our bodies and our emotions, but they're huge gifts. They're just, especially for an etheric spirit, you know? I remember asking one time a spirit what they missed most about being in a body, and they said, a good sneeze, you know, a really good sneeze.
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah. And watching a wound heal, that she mentioned watching a wound heal was something that she just, you know, we take that stuff for granted. But as a spirit, whoa, what a unique thing. What a pretty cool experience. So.
I'll be darned.
Thank you, Mark. That was really awesome. You have just nailed it. I love that you managed to pull in stuff with Gary. That was a total surprise. And you were just so right on with all of it. Absolutely accurate. You're really good. How do we find you?
If he wasn't an intelligent person, I would say he was a savant with this stuff. No, I'm not kidding. I mean, it's like he's like the Mayan Rain Man.
Yeah.
I had no idea what he was talking about for the first 2 years. He kept sending me emails. I'm going, but, you know, my friend Robert Three Eagles knew Carlos Barrios way back before anybody up here knew about him. And Carlos Barrios wrote the first book about, you know, Mayan astrology in Spanish. And after Betty died in 2007, I moved back to Utah, and Robert started teaching me about my Mayan day sign and stuff. And it started teaching me, you know, how I could help people understand their own path. And then, Mark starts sending me emails. I'm going, wow, who is this guy? You know?
Yeah. That's what I'm wondering, the same thing. Who is this guy? How do we get a hold of you, Mark?
Oh, well, Blue Otter can give you a phone number and email to contact me.
Okay.
Oh,
yeah, you're good. You're very good. Thank you. That was a real treat. I appreciate it.
Well, if you want,
Gary has a way of getting in, you know. He just, if there's somebody psychic in the crowd, he's going to come through with a message. He's just,
If anybody needs to take a little, you know, go to the room, let me know. I've got lots of, by the way, I want to warn people, if you have a spiritual gift, there's going to be people that are coming after you. I can't put it any better than John Trudeau did. You know, he's, you know, it's Thunderheart. You know, our hero FBI guy just figured things out, and he goes back to Ted Thinnell's place, and there's Jimmy sitting in the trailer, and this is what he tells him. Just before the helicopter swoop in to pick up Jimmy, here's what was said.
You got nothing on me. Don't be so sure, Jimmy. Hanging that flag upside down is a federal offense.
I was in the service, man.
Oh, yeah?
No. Decorated.
Yeah, me too, Jimmy. You're not alone.
And you should know. An upside down flag's a distress signal.
Simple militant bullshit.
Not a militant. I'm a warrior.
Yeah, and I'm John Wayne.
It's the 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow? It's a 500-year-old voice.
Have you got a key? All right. Agent LaVoy, the federal master key, please.
No, don't. The goon just busted my door Sunday. It's in the can. The key. Use the key. It's in the coffee can.
Coffee can?
Yeah, the key's in the coffee can. In the hole.
Sometimes they have to kill us. They have to kill us. Because they can't break our spirit.
We choose to write to be who we are. We know the difference between the reality of freedom and the illusion of freedom. There's a way to live with Earth and a way not to live with Earth. We choose the way of Earth. It's about power.
It is. This is about power, but when you mess with it, there's always going to be, you know, every truly traditional person I know who's the real deal, you know, put their name in and put the word fraud next to it, and, you know, they're all going to be on the New Age fraud list, you know, and it's just amazing. It's just simply amazing. They're one way or the other. They're going to try to discredit you, or they're going to come after you physically or whatever.
Yeah.
Anyway.
It's interesting times,
Robbie,
isn't it? Very interesting times.
Why don't you tell us about the Aboriginal connections, because I'm sure a lot of listeners are looking for that.
Well, it's an interesting story, and we put it in a book, and it's won a number of awards, and it's doing well because it's a fascinating story, and it's true. My late husband, Gary, that we've been talking about, was a physicist. He was an inventor. I mean, he was just brilliant, but he was very black and white, scientist, prove it to me or it doesn't exist type of mentality. And he had developed multiple sclerosis, and he was a quadriplegic for 7 years, which meant he had no feeling from the neck down and very little movement. And the doctors at a very well-respected clinic in California, Scripps in La Jolla, told him that he had about 2 years left to live because things were starting to shut down. You can't be – you got to keep things moving. So as it was, as it happened, he went into a jazz bar that evening to sort of soothe his soul, and he met this woman, a naturopathic physician from Australia. And she told him that the Aborigines in the outback, the remote Aborigines that had no contact to the white man or civilization, were pretty remarkable in their healing gifts, and that she thought they might be able to heal him. And she said she knew how to get a hold of one of the tribesmen who came into town a couple times a year for supplies. And, you know, when he contacted this through this number the next day, the tribesman was there. He answered the phone, and he said, "What took you so long? We've been waiting for 4 months. We've already gotten a person from England who to come, and we've been working on metaphors and stories that you'll understand. And she's part Aboriginal, part English, so she can speak English to you, and you'll understand. We've been told by the big guy, which can be God or source or whatever you want to call it, that we're supposed to give our healing secrets to you." And so anyway, he went into the outback 2 weeks later. He spent 10 days with them, and in 10 days' time, they totally rocked his world. He now, after 10 days with them, he had feeling in his body, which he hadn't had for 7 years. He clumsily walked down that airplane aisle on the way home, and he totally understood now what was going on, and he became a master of his own life again. So, you know, he understood then, and the Aborigines asked him to take their healing secrets out because they've been told by the big guy. He was well-respected. He was a physicist who traveled all over the world, so he had a lot of credibility to him. So he started writing this beautiful book on the way home, on the airplane ride home, Secrets of Aboriginal Healing, and it describes his healing journey with his tribe. And none of the tribe had ever seen a white person before except for the white woman, the part white woman they brought in from England, and then the tribesman who came in for supplies. So it's a beautiful story, but it also tells people how to heal because, you know, there's so much wisdom, and I know you guys know this, there's so much wisdom in these ancient indigenous cultures. And the Aborigines will tell you that if you don't understand the true nature of healing, you can't totally heal it. It's like picking the top of a dandelion. It's just going to come right back again. You've got to get to the emotional core. There's always an emotional core. So Gary came back. This was in 94. He came back in 94 and became this tremendously powerful healer. He went and became a doctor of immunology to further what he was teaching with these Aboriginal principles, which is very interesting that it's what quantum physics is discovering and the DNA and theta healing. It's what the Aborigines have always known. The mind is the biggest factor. So at one point, when I really got to know him, actually when I fell in love with him, is when he healed one of my sisters of blindness. And he healed her in 4 days, and I just instantly fell in love with the guy, realizing he had done that for me. And so that's when my journey with him started. So, yeah, he's a fascinating guy.
Then wasn't he one of the main persons that worked on MRI, magnetic resonant imaging?
Yes, he was one of the people who invented MRI. It was back then they called it, I think, it nuclear resonance imaging, something like that. The old nurses know it by that old name, but they didn't like going into something called nuclear, so they changed the name. But he was working for a company, so he didn't get any of the money from that. But yes, he was a brilliant, brilliant man. So this was, you know, he'll tell you that one of the best things the Aborigines taught him was to believe in the gray, what he calls the gray. It's you can't prove it, it's the unseen, but it exists nonetheless. That really changed his world tremendously. So yeah, so he came back and from the outback and started practicing what you might call psychoneuroimmunology. You know, you give it a fancy name, you get some initials, you get a doctorate degree, but he was basically practicing what the Aborigines taught him and did some astounding things. I mean, I have so many stories of people who come to us with tumors and stage 4 cancer. I mean, you don't come to alternative doctor unless you've gone through every route. And so these people would be quite sick, and they'd have AIDS, and they'd have all kinds of advanced stages. And he would, if it was part of the soul's journey, you know, he would heal them. Again, the Aborigines will tell you, you've got to have the mind, body, and spirit all aligned. And so is it the soul's choice as well? And then we decided we're spending so much time helping these people who are so sick. Let's go to the other end of that and start helping even more people learn how to empower themselves and be their own healer and create wellness and stop creating disease. So that's what I'm passionate about doing. And I've healed myself of hepatitis C and fibromyalgia and chronic fatigue syndrome, and it's very doable. It's just realizing that the mind is a huge factor in healing, and then getting assistance from the other side of the veil. I mean, I love how we were talking, Blue Otter, about how we get help from the other side all the time, and it's so available to us. It's just that, like I said earlier, it's a free will planet. They can't step in until you ask. So,
well, have you ever heard of when I herbal medicines practiced life in Afghanistan. The reason I ask is back in a grandfather's book called The Traditional Healer, A Comprehensive Guide to the Principles and Practice of Unani. And so this guy was on a grant from some university and in the marketplace. He wants to learn about the tradition. He ended up being taken in and taught. And he, you know, after a couple of years, you know, he came back, changed his name to Hakim Chisti, and moved to upstate New York. And the doctors in New York City would send him all their level four hopeless cases.
Sure.
And it's just amazing how many of them he healed.
Yeah.
And,
exactly.
Yeah. So you know, this is there was a point in time. Apparently, I think the shift happened. I'm noticing so much stuff that happened in '84, and I just realized this here recently because I just ran across so much stuff that happened that year, and I think that was about the time that, you know, the natives really started opening up and started being told, you know, share this with the white man. And but you know, it's like James Mooney, you know, he was told that and he ended up in jail for a while, and but eventually got three unanimous court decisions in his favor. One from the Supreme Court, one from the Utah Supreme Court, and one from Hawaii, and now we're suing the DEA because the DEA didn't follow federal law by allowing our sacrament to be shipped openly. You know, it said it was cannabis on the outside. They gave it to the Honolulu police, burned $7,000 worth of sacrament. We got permission to sue, and that's going forward in the spring. So things are opening up in a lot of different levels.
Yeah, absolutely. A lot of different levels. Yeah, it's such an exciting time to be on the planet, you know? I mean, there was no way we were going to miss out on this party, you know?
Yeah.
Truly, I mean, it's just an amazing time as we move into higher levels of waking up and enlightenment, and as things are coming to the surface, you just can't hide that stuff anymore like you could in the past, you know?
Well, I hate to keep interrupting, but the...
Oh, no.
There's that that Bible prophecy, and it says that the things that were hidden up from the foundation of the world will be in the latter days would be shouted from the housetops, and the Hopi prophecy you know, said that, you know, all the old medicine societies would be restored. And I've got the exact let's see, I wanted to give people the exact I'll find it, but yeah, I wanted to share that. And I don't normally interrupt that much, but I did want to let people know you know what this is all about, and this is why it's happening, and that, because these are prophecies that are being fulfilled.
You know, exactly, and I think it's interesting that we keep. I've noticed that you probably have too. You're so well informed that we are moving back towards the wisdom of these indigenous cultures, and like for instance, the Aborigines in the outback. There's two things that they're really strong on, and they're so important for us to pick up on this stuff. One is their connection to the land. They know they're one. They know they're one with everything, but they are so tuned into the earth, and they respect it. They sing to it. They're so tuned in. And the other thing is their ancestors, and I think this is true for a lot of these indigenous cultures. They have a really strong connection to the earth and a really strong connection and love with their ancestors as well, realizing that's a big, strong part of us.
Well, the guys, I replayed the show last night of my friend Dave White. He married into them. He's got a granddaughter who's a part Abbo, and he's quite the prepper. And I've tried for, you know, a few years to I put out feelers to try to get an elder to come on, and haven't succeeded yet. I hope to.
Yeah, they're so gifted. Oh, I mean, you know, like just the remote Aborigines, the stuff they can do when you don't have any distractions and you are in dream time more than half of the time, which they start doing at the age of three. It's astounding what you can do with this mind. It's so powerful, whether it's telepathy or telekinesis or remote viewing or shape-shifting. They have figured, I mean, they're higher dimensional beings. I think that I've been told they're Atlanteans, that they're just, down this wisdom.
They're the oldest people on the planet.
Now, we
know now that all the continents were together, you know, and even the Bible says that, and the Pangea.
Yeah.
And now they discovered Aboriginal DNA in South America. So, you know, even after continental drift happened, you know, that DNA was still left there. So, we are related to them. And I don't know whether you ever saw, History or National Geographic or something years ago, the seven daughters of Eve, they found a woman's skeleton in a cave, and they did her DNA, and they found out that 90% of the human, she migrated up from Southern Africa, and 90% of the people in the world are her descendants.
Yeah,
it's just amazing.
It is amazing.
Well, Robbie, you were mentioning things about Aborigines in the dream time.
Yes.
Have you ever read or seen a book called The Holographic Universe by Michael Talbot?
No. But it sounds like an interesting read.
Let me read to you the final paragraph here, because I think it fits with what you were just saying about the Aborigines going into dream time and such. I'll just read it real quick. It's about a couple paragraphs here. It says, "We are indeed on a shaman's journey, mere children struggling to become technicians of the sacred. We are learning how to deal with the plasticity that is part and parcel of a universe in which mind and reality are a continuum. And in this journey, one lesson stands out above all others. As long as the formlessness and breathtaking freedom of the beyond remain frightening to us, we will continue to dream a hologram for ourselves that is comfortably solid and well-defined. But we must always heed Bohm's warning that the conceptual pigeonholes we use to parse out the universe are of our own making. They do not exist out there, for out there is only the indivisible totality. And when we outgrow any given set of conceptual pigeonholes, we must always be prepared to move on, to advance from soul state to soul state, from illumination to illumination, for our purpose appears to be as simple as it is endless. We are, as the Aborigines say, just learning how to survive in infinity."
Oh, I love that. Love that. What a great way to end that. Yeah. It's well put. You know, and that's so true of the Aborigines. They spend more than half their time in dream time because that's more real to them than what we think is reality.
That is real. This is the dream.
That's exactly. They're directing the illusion, you know, and then so it's can you imagine though? I mean, can you imagine when you're in this outback and it's a harsh environment? I've been out there. It's pretty amazing. Well, you're doing nothing but you've got this mind. Their life is so simplistic. They're so advanced in what they can do with that mind. And when we get rid of all these distractions and we start focusing more inward, it's astounding what's waiting for us. It's quite the journey.
Well, Crocodile Dundee found out how it works.
I got to tell you, I did have an opportunity to be with the Aboriginal tribe a couple years ago. And I know Gary directed this after he passed. I just have no doubt he's involved with all this stuff. I was invited to do some healing ceremonies with his tribe, and They are so powerful in what they're doing. They created thunderstorms that were so powerful that when I came out of the desert and I went back to the hotel, the lady at the desk clerk said, "We haven't seen thunderstorms like that in 5 years." And it doesn't surprise me. They just know they're one with everything. They are one with everything. And so they just know how to balance and align and create these things. And that's what they're really good at. And there's so much to learn from that.
My teacher, Rolling Thunder, he said, you know, the Hopi know how to create rain. They knew there was a special kind of beetle that if you found it, went out in the desert and found it, and it just started tapping on it with a stick, that's the way that the Hopi created rain, you know.
Wow.
Worked every time.
Wow. Worked there's so many time. Things. Yeah, and then I've heard of other tribes where they envision it, and then they smell it, they smell the rain coming, and there's just so many beautiful ways. We're constantly creating. We just don't know about it. And so now we're more consciously aware of what we're creating. At least that's what I'm trying to wake people up to, is especially if they're with their health. What are you creating? You know, are you marinating in stuff that's a breeding ground for disease, or are you creating wellness? You know, start putting the power back in your hands. Don't give it over to, you know, somebody who's wearing a white coat with a stethoscope around their neck.
Yeah.
Yeah, they say that you can help your health or almost heal yourself simply by contemplating and considering how everything is connected in one.
You know, there's so many different things. That's another one, you know. Sometimes you do get into such an acute state where you need assistance, you need help. You know, you may need surgery or drugs or whatever, but I think everything should complement each other. And I think that if you really recognize that the mind is the biggest factor in wellness, you can accelerate your healing. You can really move forward in your healing with these other modalities. And sometimes you do have the ability to heal it. And I like that idea of going back to that one, is putting things back in order. It's this perfect order, and we've just sort of gotten it out of alignment, bringing it back to that perfect order again. Yeah, so many different things. The mind is, I tell you, the more I am in this, and I've been in it for at least 12 years now, the more I keep, I'm just astounded by how powerful the mind is. And Gary, you know, after he was with the Aborigines, came back and he started developing the same abilities the Aborigines do, where you can see in the body, everybody's skin is transparent, you can see the blockages of energy, you can see the tumors inside, and he had such profound respect for the brain. He could go inside the body and see and hear the clicking and the synapses and the neurons in the brain, and he just had such a respect for it. I love that background sound.
I didn't want to distract you, but you know, now my friend Robert Three Eagles built his own nuclear resonance magnetometer. And he showed me a very simple way, and he taught me about magnetic field. And now that we understand that 80% of the matter in the universe is dark matter, and that is what connects everything, we understand that everything has its own field. And
I think it's higher than 80%.
Yeah, something like that. But you know, he showed me a very simple way. He said, "Get yourself a strong magnet, one of those diadenium magnets." And he said, "Well, what he did, we were in his lab, and he says, well, what I'm going to do is I got a pure piece of copper here. He says I'm going to put it, going to hide it someplace over here. Shut your eyes." And I actually did this with a cannabis with some Apache friends to prove to them in Walsenburg, Colorado. I went and I said, "Hey, Jimmy." I said, I want you to hide some cannabis in this room. And I said, give me a pure sample of it. And I said, I'm going to simply put a magnet with the south pole upwards and put the sample on that. And then I'm going to stand near it. And all I just had a copper rod. And I said, I'm going to stick my fingers in my ears and I'm going to go la 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 la. And you hide some more somewhere else in the room. And I said, I'm going to find it, because that that cannabis sitting on that strong magnet is going to create the resonant frequency of cannabis, and it's going to and this rod is going to lead me to. And they laughed. I said, "No, just do it," and I did it. And they were absolutely astounded. And so the next day, now Jimmy was quite the treasure hunter. We went out to a place that's been used for the conquistadors, helmets were found near there. So it's been used as a watering hole for 500 years. And there was a couple of campfires, and we had some, 0.999 silver. And apparently, there was two places there where there might have been some buried. There was some storms coming. We had to leave real fast. But what happened was I said, what's going to happen, Jimmy, is the rod's going to point toward what you're looking for. And I said, as you get close to it, I said, you can even tell how deep it is, because if it's 2.5 feet deep, I said, when you get 2.5 feet from the, think of the vertical axis of where it would be in the ground. If it's 2.5 feet deep, 2.5 feet away from it, I said, the rod's going to bend back toward you. I said, that's anti-gravity. Then as you get right over, the rod will start spinning. And I proved this to him. And but Robert, he was my first traditional teacher, taught me the great law of the Six Nations. And I lost contact with him for about 9 years. And he taught himself metallurgy. He opened up. He's at terrafirmaassayers.com. Last year, I think it was a gold mine that flew him from Utah to Montgomery, Alabama, 10 times, because he can tell how deep stuff is, because if a vein moves, a mine's interested in knowing where'd it go, but he
right.
can do this with anything. He's working with I think this most recent find off the coast of Florida. I knew he was working with the state archaeologist of Florida. But he proved to the state archaeologist of Florida satisfaction that a photograph actually carries the photons, and he could actually just with a photograph locate stuff from a distance. And he proved
it.
Don't
you love it? Yeah.
Oh, it was unbelievable. Now, see, Gary would have understood this, and they would have
absolutely.
Thought I'd throw that in, but does anybody need to take a potty break?
Sure.
Okay. Well, while we're doing this, I want to. I travel with people in 72, and I want to play a song called. And it's 2.5 minutes in a sacred manner. I live. This is a friend of mine by the name of Frank Fields, and he was Up with People's most famous vocalist. And we'll be back in 2.5 minutes, folks. This is called In a Sacred Manner I Live.
The hot sun on the dry ground, sagebrush and mesquite and chaparral around. Out away is a big dust devil, moving on its way. I guess they're never still. In a sacred manner I live, to the heavens I gaze. In a sacred manner I live. My horses are many. And the cedar, the mighty oak, and the tiny flower, the sandstone in the valley, the mountains high, and the running streams. In a sacred manner I live, in a sacred manner I live. My horses are many. one with me and all the children. In a sacred manner I live, to the heavens I gaze. In a sacred manner I live. My horses are many,
starting to wake up. A few people are listening. Yeah,
I think we're gaining numbers all the time.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I mean, yeah, I feel good.
That was the Red Crow Westerman, played Ten Bears in Dances with Wolves. I mean, who knows that he had a long career as a musician, you know, before he became an actor. But he did, yeah, he did some real cool ones. So, well, we're back, folks.
That's a beautiful song.
Yeah, I had my eyes closed during the whole thing, and then I opened my eyes, and it was, I looked at the time, it was 11:11.
I love it when that happens.
Yeah. So, go ahead with you. Sorry to interrupt you so much, Sue, but you. It's hard to get your story out on our show.
Oh, no, it's fine. I think you're a fascinating guy, and you've got so many stories. I tell you, it's just it's very entertaining for me listening to what's coming out of you. And I love the little sounds you put in the background. So
yeah,
fun. Yeah.
We try.
Yeah.
So
know,
anyway.
Good.
Yeah. Tell. Oh, hey, listen. Mark emailed me. He said,
your husband had, you know, like 13 patents, and a lot of it had to do with the deep space technology.
Yeah.
And my dad worked on in 68 when aerospace was over with. You know, my dad ran a division for Douglas Aircraft, you know, for in the early 60s, and then because of the Vietnam War, things kind of petered out. We moved to Florida. He worked on the Nike Zeus missile. And then when that was done, went to work for Grumman at Bethpage, and they worked out all of the grand tour of the planet for Voyager.
Wow.
That was his forte as an engineer, was figuring out all this stuff. And of course, you know, Star Trek, you know, they picked up V'ger, it came back, you know, but Voyager's still out there.
Yeah, and it's interesting because Gary, one time I know, was when he was a physicist, he worked for NASA at one point and did worked on the Challenger at one point.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's interesting how these paths cross now and then. So, yeah. He loved putting stuff up in deep space, and so he would go around the world and put things up in space for different governments. So.
My dad, you know, they may have met. My dad had a rating as a research scientist with NASA. What years was he active with them?
Boy, you're asking me. I'm really bad with dates. Really 70s, bad with dates.
80s.
Probably would have been the 70s. Yeah, would have been the exact 70s and 80s. He had his own aerospace company. Yeah, because it was 94 that he went into the outback, and that's when it changed. Totally changed his life. But yeah, he.
Wow.
He was a brilliant man. But you can imagine when you're doing patents, and he was actually most of his patents are top secret. You can't find it. Because he was working for the government at the time. So talk about immersed in black and white and the scientific world. So you can just imagine when he, out of desperation, went into the outback, which everybody thought he was crazy to do that. Nobody would go with him. They thought it was just insane that this tribe is going to, you know, heal you. And they thought, he's in a wheelchair, you know. He can't do this. He can't go. And so I guess all of his friends and family thought, if he doesn't have anybody to go with him, he won't go. Well, he's, you know, triple Scorpio. He went. And they did unload him like cargo out of this plane. And then Ray, the Aboriginal contact, picked him up and they did go to Uluru, Ayers Rock, which I guess is an amazing vortex of energy. And can I just say, Blue Otter, that when I went to stay with the tribe for a little bit, and I mean, I just think it's an interesting thing. I went to Ayers Rock as well, Uluru. I should be calling it Uluru. It is such a strong vortex of energy, and there are so many UFOs flying around it. It's like monster light. And it was kind of a shock to me to see. First of all, I was kind of shocked when I went to Uluru to see tourists all over, that they've got an airport and they've got hotels, and I just sort of envisioned this sacred site, but it's very popular with the Asian tourist. But here's what was bizarre to me. There are tourists sitting out there in their lawn chairs flashing flashlights at these UFOs, getting a response back. It was so bizarre that there are so many of them. So it was really cool.
You know what they call that? They call that a close contact of the fifth kind, and it's happened to me twice. Now, you want to hear a weird story?
I love it.
This is 20 years ago. I lived in Fredonia, Arizona, and near my friend Robert Three Eagles, and we ran into St. George to see a movie about 50 miles. We're coming back, it's about midnight, and we're just getting out of the car. We were living in a 35-foot fifth wheel at the time, and as I got out, I saw this light coming from the north. And now, I was trained, one of my first hobbies besides archery, I eventually became a world-class archer, but was astronomy. I used to do astrophotography. And there was no nav lights on that aircraft. And I said, look at that right there. I said, coming down from the north. I said, that might be a UFO. I said, why don't we all ask it? If you're a space brother, let us know. And just as soon as it got up to the zenith, this light, which, minute of angle size, it was about a third of the size of the moon. And all of a sudden, when it reached the zenith, it turned on its plasma generator, and it just was, wow! It was twice the size of the moon very briefly.
Wow!
And that freaked me out. And then back in 2003, I was sitting on top of a mountain in southern Missouri, I was living on private tribal property, and he didn't know his constellations, and he pointed at the Pleiades, and he called that Little Dipper. I said, no, actually, I said, that's the Pleiades. And I said, let me teach you some other constellations. I said, as a matter of fact, I said, you see that fast walker that, you know, you can see satellites moving. I thought it was a fast walker. Now, it's 10:30 at night. We're facing roughly north. The sun has set behind us 2 hours ago, and this thing's coming in from our right. And I said, I said this star. I said there's a little. It looks like they call it Lyra. And I said the brightest star. It's one of the brightest stars in the heavens. Is called Vega. And I said in 10 seconds, that fast walker is gonna go right by it. I said, so put your eyes on the fast walker and let it follow. And just as that, what I thought was a satellite, got to Vega, a beam of light shot out from behind in the reverse direction of travel, swept down on us for about 2 or 3 seconds, and stayed on for about 10 seconds, and then just disappeared, and it went on its way as if it was just another satellite that people see traversing the sky every
night.
Wow.
But
the chief was really interesting. He knew he could say, hey, he said, Space Brothers, he said, they're coming tonight. And he says, let's go out about 9:30. And sure enough, there was this wilderness area. We lived in the Mark Twain National Forest, and there was a wilderness area about 15 miles north of us. And those nights we'd go out, and they would appear like hazy yellow flares, and there was always two of them, and they would wink out and they'd move, you know, a few miles and wink back on. And this one night it was really comical because here comes the helicopters, and they're you know, we're looking north, helicopters are coming in from the east, and and these two UFOs, they decide, oh, we're going to lead these guys in a merry chase, and we're on a 900-foot mountain, and we could see they swung a huge arc, maybe 300-mile arc. They probably passed over St. Louis, and they came right back to the same spot. And the helicopters are trying to find them, but it was so funny. One night, one of the kids came in, and they said, "We just saw a UFO. We just saw a UFO." I said, "Don't calm down. What did you see?" Well, they said it was right over the house. It was the chief's son. He's in the Marines now. Well, what did it look like? I said, well, you know, it was maybe 100 feet off the ground, and it had all kinds of lights around the edges, and it went over in that direction. And they said we saw it may have gone down into they saw like a flash of light, and we wondered if it crashed. Well, I turned in a MUFON report and explaining where we would there in Eastwood, and the next morning, here come the choppers. I get up, and there's seven or eight black helicopters. They came in, vectored right over the res, and headed right straight out in that direction.
Yeah.
What happened after that, I don't know, but apparently they took it very seriously.
Yeah.
And you, I mean, you can put in the word Walsenburg, Walsenburg, Colorado UFO, and you can read my report of a UFO that I saw. It was a newer version of now these are the government triangles. The TR-3B is the older version of what I saw, but this thing was really interesting. But anyway, yeah, when we were moving to California when I was eight, my dad used to like to get up at 3 o'clock in the morning, like to drive early, and I was in the front with him, and I was always looking up in the sky, and here I had my arms in the dashboard, I'm looking up, and something flew over us that was cigar shaped and it had three ventral fins. And Dad knew something would happen because the electrical system in the car blinked out, and
wow.
he said what was that? And I said, well, he says he could feel the hair in his arms, and I said, Dad, something just flew over us. And when my mom was pregnant with me, my uncle and my dad, my uncle's in the oil, gas and oil business, he's 90 now, but they were shadowed by a UFO all the way from outside Houston to about 200 miles when they're on their way to Vicksburg. They actually stopped, and when they stopped and got out and looked, it stopped too.
Wow.
And
were they freaked out about it?
Oh yeah, Dad was a fervent, you know, and I've got some other stories I could tell you, not quite as exciting as those, but yeah, I'll tell you one more. 1976, I'm in a Western swing band. This is just after Bob Wills died, and I'm out on the West Coast. I'm 21, standing on a street corner with a friend of mine in Long Beach, and it was the day after the last Chinese above ground nuclear test. And it was a perfectly clear day. We were Long Beach, up on a bluff, and standing there on a corner. And he and I had a beer in our hand. Okay, we drank half of it. That's a fact. I look out toward the west. Here comes seven. They were pearlescent, and they were the same size as the moon, flying in V echelon formation. They went from horizon to horizon. And like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, maybe 10 seconds, and then one of them came back and went up to the zenith and turned on its side, so I could see how thin it was, and it went zip right up until I couldn't see it anymore. So
yeah,
I've seen some. Dad saw a saucer, and they wouldn't take him in the army because he was too skinny. His brother graduated from the Naval Academy, but he escorted the prototype for the B-29 bomber's magnesium nose casting to Wright-Patterson to be X-rayed, and somebody left a hangar door open, and as they were passing, the MP said, "Hey, what's that in there?" And the MP gave him a dirty look and said, "You never saw that."
Yeah,
so
right.
That, you know.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Well, you know, it's interesting. When I was in, I did a little bit of speaking and teaching in Australia, and I think I mentioned at one point what I had seen, you know, that I'd seen these UFOs at Uluru, and it is such a common thing there. They don't have the jaded news. They don't. It's open. It's very. It's not a big deal. So it was interesting to be able to talk about this stuff quite openly in my presentations, and people would all have stories. They all had stories. I think they were kind of surprised at how much that's hidden from us here in the United States, because it's no big deal in most countries in the world. It's just here in the United States. They're just so filtering that
uh-huh.
stuff. But that's changing, too. So
Did you ever hear a Robbie Robertson's song, The Lights?
Not that comes to mind. No, I don't think
so. Yeah, listen to this for a few minutes. Hang on, this is going to blow your mind. This is about an Indian that gets picked up. Hang on.
Okay.
Just on the outside.
On the outskirts of civilization. That's where you see him.
That was very cool. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a cool song.
It is a cool song. It's pretty eerie. I like it.
Yeah.
You know what it reminds me of? Part of the lyrics to that, I'm sure you remember the name of this tribe, and is it Africa, where they have these paintings, these ancient paintings in their caves of their our space brothers and sisters?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, in the they have the Pleiadians or something like that?
I used to live like 10 miles from Newspaper Rock, I lived 22 miles south of Moab for a while, and yeah, there's paintings of our space aliens on that rock.
Yeah, yeah, very interesting. Yeah, I think things are coming to light. Things are changing. I think that people are not afraid to admit that they believe in that stuff, or in ghosts or these things. Things are changing. So,
mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, that we can't. We're not being made fools of for believing this stuff anymore. So.
Well, now let us know. You know, talk as long as you want. You know, if you get tired or you feel like you know, we've got another 20 minutes to talk and or not, just whatever you want to do.
Well, I'm happy to go another 20 minutes with you, then call it a day.
Yeah.
If that works for you.
Tell us some more.
Okay. All right. Well, you know, the Aborigines are pretty interesting. I don't know if you know much about them, the Outback Aborigines, but their gifts are, when you to me, they're like ninth. They're fifth dimensional beings. I kind of look at us as we're third dimension moving into fourth, and then moving into the fifth, and they're already there. And I like to see what are those communities, what are these cultures that are already so advanced in their enlightenment, what are they doing and how are they living? And like I said earlier, they're very much attuned to their ancestors. They're really attuned to the oneness, that everything is connected, and that's how you can feel the rain, because you are the rain, you are the earth. And how they're telepathic with everything. They don't, you know, when we started speaking out loud, we stopped speaking the old language, as the Aborigines say, and we lost our abilities to communicate to the plants like the Aborigines do, to find out what plants are for healing or to find out where the water is. They will just tune in and ask. And I love how they will talk about how the trees are singing to us. They hear the trees singing to us. And I recently had a couple of Australian guests just last month stay with me, and they live deep in the forest in, I think it's kind of by Melbourne. And they were saying how you can hear, it's such a virgin, huge, untouched area in the forest. They said you can just hear the hum of the forest, this mm-hmm. beautiful singing. I thought, wow, what a cool thing. We've just sort of disconnected from that. But you know, one of the things that the Aborigines will tell us is that we civilized tribes are so chaotic. Our minds are constantly chattering, and they just think that it's speaking out loud is very chaotic and very disconcerting. So when Gary was with them, it was really quite an honor to be with his tribe for the time that he was with them. He said it was really quiet. He didn't understand what was going on. He just thought they were just sort of gazing off, not realizing they were in dream time. And then he started to recognize that whatever he had a thought, they were kind of stumbling over themselves to get whatever it was he needed, whatever he was thinking. And he started to pick up on they're telepathic. So Gary became telepathic, and I didn't know that. And he didn't, you know, he's one of those guys who was brilliant, but he was very quiet. If you didn't ask the question, you weren't going to get the answer. And I didn't know this guy was telepathic until I'd been married to him for a little while and realized, you know, all of a sudden I'm like, you know what, Gary, let's go. You want to go get an ice cream cone? Well, I started to realize he was the one sort of planting those thoughts into my head. So, yeah, he was a very, very interesting guy to live with, because he was developing the skills that the Aborigines had taught him, and he would communicate to them all the time. They were always communicating, and he would sit and then he started doing what the Aborigines did, where he would be in this dream time for hours at a time. And towards the end of his life, he would just be weeping with joy from being in this higher vibration, which is where the Aborigines hang out. They're in this vibration of love and community and gratitude and joy. And he started kind of doing the same thing. And you just find him often sitting in the kitchen with just tears rolling down his cheeks from just the joy of being in that higher vibration. So many gifts he learned from them. Yeah, they're quite amazing. Yeah.
Yeah, you know, the bull roarer. I'm looking for the sound effect. If you just do a Google search for bullroarer, this is that thing. You remember in Crocodile Dundee when his Abbo friend went up on the rock and he swung this thing around and made this wah 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 wah, and you can hear this thing for miles, and it's a kind of a It's really something. And but the Abos are not the only people that use it. It was used over here on this continent too. It's called a bull roarer.
Yeah. It's interesting how these things are sort of planted all over the world, aren't they? You know, they pop up all over. I tell you what's haunting to me is the didgeridoo and just the sounds of that and how it really does align and balance the chakras. It's such a powerful tool. It's beautiful. You're good.
Robbie.
Yeah, I love it.
Have you had any, like, kind of like personal experiences or something where you kind of either went into or even just partially dream time?
Yes, I have had some experiences, and you know, that kind of reminds me, Mark, of when I was in the outback. I had this opportunity to be with this the tribe, and it was only the women that they don't let white women come in and be connected to the male aborigines. So it was only women, and the women were deciding that they needed to start spreading their knowledge and give it more to certain people. So I was invited because of my connection to Gary. And, you know, it was really interesting. When I would wake up during the night, I would see, you know how you see things through your third eye, and I when you wake up really quickly, all of a sudden you see what's going on your third eye. When I was in the desert with them, I could see these patterns that look like what you would typically see as Aboriginal art. And I knew that what they were doing was sort of downloading and transmitting things to me, encoding. It was amazing, and I could feel it so strongly, and it was such a gift what they were doing and the things they were doing for me. But I got to tell you, when I first got to the outback, it was such a harsh environment. It's like 130 degrees.
Yes.
If you touch anything, like if you touch a tree or a bush, it's been baked in this heat for so long that you just automatically get splinters. You don't want to touch anything. And it's got the deadliest snakes and spiders. And I mean, we literally had a tarantula show up.
Yeah,
and there were wild camels. Wild camels out there with us, and there were wild pigs. And the first night I can remember, I met the tribe, and I met them by bonfire in the night, and it was kind of scary, you know. And I'm thinking to myself, what did I get into? What was I thinking, you know? And I saw a dingo, and then I saw a young child, and that brought some comfort to me it's so primitive, it's so different. There's so many bizarre protocols you don't know about until you're plunked into a totally different culture. And I remember lying in my sleeping bag that first night, and I heard this plane go overhead. And I can tell you, this may sound bizarre, but it gave me comfort just hearing that plane and feeling that connection, because I felt like I had stepped back with this being in this primitive environment. But they were beautiful. They're so giving. They're so loving. They're so joyful. They just always have smiles on their faces. They live a very simple life, very strong on community, just beautiful people. So, yeah, it was really quite an honor to be with them. And I know that...
Go ahead. Anybody's seen Rabbit Proof Fence, the guy that played the Aboriginal cop, he was the same guy that played Crocodile Dundee's friend. I can't remember his name right. First name is David. But yeah, he's quite the actor. I just can't remember his last name.
Yeah.
But he was the one that was out there. You know, they've got these cast iron lances, you know, and he's out there doing the dance, and then he looks at his watch. He says, "Crikey, I've got to get out. I got an appointment." You know, it's like the guy was in two worlds. You know, he'd been to graduate school, came back into the bush, and was living in. What is that guy's name? Dave. Anyway, really famous. I'll look up his name here in a second.
But that's a good point you bring up, Blue Otter, in that some of these people they've got a foot in both worlds. You know, there's a lot of Aborigines and there's a lot of other cultures that's the same thing. I'm sure Native Americans, where they're kind of going back and forth between two worlds. They may have degrees from universities. They may be in the city sometimes, and then they go back to the land, to the culture.
Right. His name is David Gulpilil, Gulpilil, David Gulpilil.
Yeah.
And
powerful
he's been
movie.
Yeah, he's been in quite a few. We don't see him all here, he's quite the actor.
Yeah, I think Rabbit Proof Fence is a very powerful movie. Yeah, it's hard to believe that stuff went on not that long ago. It wasn't that long ago that they were still doing that.
Hey, one of the ladies I interviewed, you know, had I not gone to graduate school very briefly, Voc Rehab, even though it was against the rule, Voc Rehab put me in graduate school. Didn't last long because they don't give you any. They'll pay for your books and tuition, but there's no. Voc Rehab doesn't help with living expenses, and all we had was, Betty's VA assistance and my son's Social Security from his mom's passing. It wasn't enough. But while I was there, I picked up I spent newspapers in the Southern Idaho, Northern Utah area. Carried a story about a woman by the name of Earth Thunder. And Earth Thunder in 1951, she was 10 years old. Her, and of course, there's the old Cherokee legend about the Cherokees that went to the Rocky Mountains. And they'd been living up in the Sawtooth Mountains area, hunter-gatherer. In the summertime, they'd go up the mountains. In the wintertime, they'd live down in the lava tubes. And in 1951, when she was 10 years old, the miners, started moving up into their valley with machines. And there, she just remembers, the client was only about 50 people. She remembers, angry words. The miners killed all the adults. There was her and four other little children, and the youngest is like 5. She says, hey, if you don't believe me, she says, the sheriff that took me to the orphanage in Boise is still alive. But this woman was the only person. She traveled back and forth quite a bit to Australia, and I've interviewed her twice now. She lives in Boise. Her name is Earth Thunder, and she's the only person that Rolling Thunder, who was probably the most famous medicine man of the 20th century, ever let doctor him, because he was having problems with his legs due to diabetes, and she knew how to go out and kill a coyote and bring that coyote medicine in to get him back up on his legs and walking for a while. And absolutely. And she looks, in 1540 Cherokees didn't look like Indians. They're DeSoto said that we had. There was black people there. There was red-haired and blonde-haired, and so we had already intermarried, here.
Yeah.
In 1540.
Kind of a hybrid already, different mix.
And she doesn't look like the so-called Indian, but there's a painting called "Genetic Cherokee Sisters" that you might be able to find up online. Very, very common in Cherokee families to get the three sisters that are born, and they all look more or less alike. But one of them's black. Haired brown eye, one's red haired green eye, and one's blonde and blue, and they all come from the same mother, and we've been that way for long time.
Yeah. I'll tell you, I was surprised to see when I met the Aboriginal tribe how they have blonde hair. That really,
they do.
Yeah, that was really weird. Cool. Oh my gosh, the kids are so adorable. Mm-hmm. They're just. It's beautiful. It's really beautiful, yeah. But variations of, really, really dark skin and lighter skin, it's very interesting. And protocols, it's we don't realize how different the cultures are until you...
Hey, we got a caller. We got a call. I didn't know. Sorry. Hey, let's see if I can get out of line here. Hey, caller for area code 619, did you have a question?
No, I'm just listening.
Okay. Okay, we'll put you back into where you can listen. Just wanted to say hi, and we know there's some folks out there, and thanks for listening.
Yeah.
My pleasure.
Sorry about... Okay. All right, go ahead, Robbie. I'm sorry.
Oh, no, that's okay. No, I was just, I know that, and I'm sure you've had this happen because you've been around a lot of different cultures, a lot of different indigenous tribes, that, we don't know how many protocols we've got until you start breaking them. And I tell you, I was breaking them left and right when I was with the tribe. And when they go into ceremony, you stop. And I just remember trying to do some of the dances they were teaching, and I've got a sense of humor, and I started laughing at myself, and and immediately I got the look of, and they were very kind about it, but they're like, no, this is serious. There's no laughing involved in this. So
but
just a lovely, lovely. I just love how the remote ones, the truly remote ones that have not had any contact at all with civilization, they're just they're living in a much higher vibration. They're living in much more of a love-based, service, gratitude, community-oriented space. It's and so powerfully, I think this is hopefully this is where we're headed. Is we're moving towards the same thing.
The Cherokee, we call that Gadugi. It's unpaid community effort for the the Bible, in the Book of Acts, it's called All Things in Common, and it was so sacred that Ananias and Sapphira, they held back, you know, they sold everything in order to join the All Things Common group. They had to move into a community. They sold everything they had, and they were but they held some things back.
Mm-hmm.
And Ananias was killed by the Holy Spirit, or by God, you know. And when Sapphira, when she found out about it and she protested, I mean, this, we're talking a really sacred thing here when we're talking about all things common. And I believe, now when Mark was talking about sacred technology, I believe this all things common thing may be the thing that saves a few people from the coming earth changes, because I worked with Robert Ghostwolf, you know, before he died, and I didn't realize until 7 years after his passing that the Hopi elders had published in a book, after Hale Bopp came through, they said 7 years from the time that the twins would be gone, they said that the red star, Kachina, would be discovered when the blue star was in the sky. Well, I found out about the prophecy that month. Now that was March. That was March of 2004, as I recall.
You've got an amazing memory, Blue Otter. I got to give you that.
I got on space. You won't believe this. I got on space.com, and I put in red star. 2 weeks previous, and you can go to prophecykeepers.com and read the details. 2 weeks previous to this, the elders said it. They said it would be. It might even take a telescope to find it. Well, some astronomers were doing something, and they discovered this red dwarf 10 years light years away from us, and it was when the brightest blue comet was ever seen. Comet Neat was in the sky, and there's been a lot of talk about this and that, and Marshall Masters and I mean we parted company on this issue, because he kept saying, well, you know, insisting on this, and I said, no, I'm sorry, you know, the elders, this is what they said would happen, this is exactly what happened, and it happened at that time. And of course, you know, the whole, you know, thing that he was putting forward, you know, didn't happen, but it did happen. And that was the month I started this show, and I was doing research for it. But you can go to prophecykeepers.com. But what I was told in 92, the first time I ever asked Creator, I just said to him, look, I said, I need to have direct contact with you. And I said, I'm going to sit here on the side of the bed, try not to fall asleep. And about 15 minutes later, my body started to vibrate. And, of course, I know you never go to an elder without a question.
Yeah.
And I said, why? I said, why? My first question is, why do the Mormons say they're going to have to migrate back to the center of the country someday? Joseph Smith said they're going to have to go to the nearest bridge in the Colorado and take a horseshoe-shaped route on the way back to Missouri. And about 10 to 15 minutes later, as I relaxed my body started vibrating. And two words came into my head, and the two words were the flood. And I thought to myself, what? I thought, the flood? Well, shortly thereafter, I had a dream, and in the dream, I was totally naked, which means you're innocent. You know, I was running around this mall and running from pillar to post trying to hide, you know, my package. And I found the mall office, and I stuck my – opened the door and just stuck my head in so the receptionist couldn't see I was naked. I said, how do I find my way back? And she said, oh, that's easy. Just follow the green line. So I followed the green line outside, and I was walking up these stairs toward chapel, and the chapel doors opened, and the water that came out of there was unbelievable. It went over my head, and it swept away all the cars in the parking lot, including mine. And
wow.
Then I just remember being lifted up off the ground and carried at high speed eastward. And as I got close to Kansas City, but there was it looked like there had been water everywhere, puddles, lakes. The Great Plains don't have that much water on them. And the winter creator sent me on a semi homeless thing for about 15 months, between December 2008 and May of 2010. And I was talking with an Ottawahi from one of the Texas Cherokee groups, and he just laughed. And I said, Buff talks to White Buffalo was his name. And I said, what are you laughing about? And he said, ma'am, he says, I saw the same thing the same year. I said, what? And he said, yeah. And he's real good friends with he's a sun dancer, and he lived a little bit west of Denver, and so whenever the Lakota elders would go on the road to California, they'd stop by. I mean, people like the Arvel Looking Horse and all the famous names. Well, he was up on Lookout Mountain doing Han Bledsoe, Vision Quest. And he saw a giant wave come across the Great Plains, and he says it was like Denver was flushed like a toilet.
Wow.
And then I ran across, of course, the third prophecy of Fatima was supposed to have been revealed, but never really was. But I found out that in 1985, there was a group of German Catholics that buttonholed John Paul II. Then this is also on the front page, prophecykeepers.com. And he told him, he said, well, he says, if it were to be published that the sheets of ice and entire oceans would oversweep entire continents and killing millions of people in the blink of an eye, that's not something that's so much, you know, to be published,
yeah.
Don't you think? You know, and
but
this event, the Catholic seers associate with a star. And the story's up online, you can read it there. And we're about out of time. If you got some final comments.
No, it's been really. Thank you, Mark. That was beautiful. That was really very insightful and right on.
Though, this Saturday, September 14th, is going to align with Gary's birth. So maybe you'll get some kind of special contact then.
Oh, I have no doubt. My heads are up now. I'm going to be paying attention. Yeah, he's good that way.
Now,
he's really good that way.
Tomorrow night, we interview Loria Del Toy. She's the lady that released the I Am America Earth Change maps that show the Earth, you know, before and after the, you know, what's coming. Now, the Hopi elders, they said as long as you're in the mountains and forest, you're going to be up high. So they've always said you need to get up high. And we're hearing that probably might be a good idea to be, you know, when mountains and forest, you know, you're talking, you know, you need to get up, you know, 700 feet of elevation, because apparently who knows what could happen. That volcano off the in the Canary Islands, if that thing let go, you know, we'd have a tidal wave that completely sweep all the east coast of America, and, you know, who knows what. But yeah, just
sounds like a good show tomorrow night.
Yeah, and so we invite everybody to listen, and thanks so much for being on our show. And this is your show. If you ever want to come back on and you got an update or something, just let us know. Even if it's a 10-minute update, we can put on, you know, whatever. It's your show.
Oh, thank you so much. It's been really a pleasure to talk to you, Blue Otter. You're just a delight. You're such a breath of fresh air, I'll tell you.
Tell my wife that she's 5 years older, and she had everything just so, you know. Then I came along, you know, and the otter, you know, the color blue, the otter, we're spoilers. We come in and we mix everything up, and you know, we're fire starters. I'm not necessarily a fire keeper, but I can start a fire.
I don't have any doubt of that. I love the playful nature of the otter too. You gotta love that.
Oh yeah, I'm not consistent in everything and putting everything back where it belongs, you know. So, hey, buddy,
that's okay.
We'll see you tomorrow night, Loria Del Toy, and she's going to talk about her new book. And everybody, good night, and thanks for listening.
Thank you.
You're listening
Bye-bye.
To a live interview tonight on Prophecy Keepers Radio. When the host says the coast is clear, please call in. This is Jasa Sagonie, a seventh great grandson of Samanuka, keeper of the Holy Cherokee Ark, who during the American Revolution became first beloved man of the Cherokee, head man of the Upper, Middle, and Lower Cherokee. Please join us at 5 p.m. Pacific Time on Sunday evenings and learn how you, regardless of ancestry, may gain the privilege of worshiping as you please, even using indigenous, plant-based, native sacraments. Aho. You have been led by the Spirit to Prophecy Keepers Radio, a cooperative service of the White Roots of Peace Council. Whether it be the modern Asaga of Peru, the current Kahunas of Hawaii, today's medicine people of the Americas, the Holy Ones of Africa, shamans of the East, North, West, and South, or the present day Atawehis of the Cherokee, we bring you the traditional elders and teachers of our modern times and their confidants from the Americas, the steppes of Asia, the Holy Land, the islands of the sea, Africa, and Australasia. We have not been conquered, and we defy the established order. This is Will Bluewater, the host of Prophecy Keepers Radio, speaking on behalf of the White Roots of Peace Council.
It's 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow? It's 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow? It's the 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow?
Thanks for listening to the Wisdom of the Elders on Prophecy Keepers Radio, revealing closely guarded ancient secrets here in the modern information age of Aquarius. Folks, the scriptures say my people perish for lack of knowledge. We live in a world that's becoming more and more dangerous as time goes by. Millions of people are aware of this fact now and are actively preparing. Back in 2004, the folks here at Prophecy Keepers Foundation foresaw this situation and began preparing information for you. Friends, I seriously suggest that you head over to prophecykeepers.info and take a look at the Prophecy Keepers Trilogy and Preparedness Library. The Prophecy Keepers Trilogy is a 1,000-page intelligence briefing. The trilogy is a sum total of many years of collecting, collating, analyzing, and comparing prophecies from all over the planet. Before he passed away in 1985, Mad Bear Anderson predicted that someone would do exactly what we have done. Mad Bear passed into spirit in 1985 before he could realize his dream of collecting and comparing prophecies from all over the world. He said in his biography, "Someday someone will collect all the native people's prophecies, myths, and legends and would publish them in one place so they could be compared with those of all native peoples worldwide, and then we really will have something." And friends, you'll be absolutely shocked to find out that we discovered exactly what that something was that Mad Bear wanted everyone to know. As it turns out, that certain special something that Mad Bear was searching for in the prophecies has everything to do with your physical safety and how to protect it. Now, folks, there's absolutely nothing available on the planet like this collection. You'll receive instant access to the Prophecy Keeper's Wisdom Treasury Vault. This is a huge 4.88 gigabyte library, 3,287 files and 222 folders. You'll also receive direct access to links that will allow you to download all 145 past Prophecy Keepers interviews. Now, folks, I won't kid you. Prophecy Keepers does need money to continue to operate. We had a very close call at the end of last month. We almost didn't raise the funds that we needed to stay here on Blog Talk Radio. So please head on over to prophecykeepers.info and take a look. OCO, Ginalee, this is Blue Otter coming to you from the Cumberland Plateau, the ancient home of the Aniuntikwalaski, the people of the lightning and thunder, or the military protectors of the Cherokee Nation.